Welcome to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hemmerker. In each episode, she'll talk with your favorite romantic suspense authors. They will take you behind the scenes of the writing process, giving excerpts from their writing, and share stories about their writing life.
Texas Cold Case Threat by Jessica R. Patch. When a cold case turns hot, an isolated ranch goes from refuge to crime scene. After a murderer sends her taunting letters, FBI behavioral analyst Chelsea Banks retreats to a friend's ranch and interrupts the housekeeper being attacked. When evidence connects the break-in to a cold case serial killer, Chelsea's best friend, Texas Ranger Tack Holliday, needs her help. With Tack at her side, this could be Chelsea's chance to catch two killers, unless one of them gets her first.
Hi, and welcome to this episode of The Romantic Side of Suspense. I'm your host, Sarah Hemmerker, and I'm so glad you joined me. Today, I'm talking with Lisa Harris and Jessica Patch. So, obviously, this is set in Texas. I guess, big surprise there. Now, are you from Texas?
Oh, no. No, I am actually, I spent the first 18 years of my life in Southern Illinois, and then my husband's from the South, the Memphis area, so I've been here since I was just a baby at 19, so almost 27 years.
Oh, wow. All right. But you like to set your books in Texas?
This is the first book I'm setting in Texas. Typically, I keep the book set in Memphis or somewhere in Tennessee, Mississippi, often a fictional town that's based off somewhere real. And I decided to change scenery and states. This is the first one, but all three will be set in Texas.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about the book. So, I mean, obviously there's a cold case and something's happening there. There's a threat. You can get it from the title.
Yes, I love cold cases. You can't write a love-inspired suspense without a threat involved. This is the first book in a Quantico Profilers thriller series. Oh. And they're marketing as a Quantico Profilers thriller. Fighting. And this is going to follow a team of behavioral analysts out of Quantico, or profilers. And my heroine is the profiler, and she has really messed up a profile. She's found out that her profile led to the wrong killer. And she puts stock in everything according to the fact that she can profile. So she's having a rough go of it. So she's come to Texas to stay on a ranch and kind of figure out if her career is over or what she's going to do. And it intersects her with a serial killer. And her good friend, who's a Texas Ranger, who helped her stay on the ranch, is actually working in the cold case division. And this particular crime intersects with some of the cold cases that he's working. So she's actually working to catch two killers in this book. Wow. Or they're going to catch her.
Busy lady.
She's busy.
So tell me about the catch. I mean, I'm because it's romantic suspense, I'm guessing you're not talking about baseball or football.
No, there is no sports involved.
What are they catching?
Yeah. Well, they're catching criminals, of course, because this is romantic suspense. Yeah. This is actually book three in my U.S. Marshal series. So it centers, and the whole series centers around two main characters, Madison and Jonas, who are actually, well, U.S. Marshals. And so fugitives and catching fugitives and some of those things that a U.S. Marshal would do is, yeah. So, and this is the wrap up to the series, as well as kind of a wrap up to the overarching thread that has to do with Madison and her husband who was killed and new love with Jonas.
Oh, nice. Yeah. You get them all in there. So now I've written a couple of books about U.S. Marshals. That's a fun one to do because there's not much information out there.
I know. I didn't know very much. And that's why I thought I want to do something different. And what is out there is very interesting. You know, I mean, obviously we know fugitives, but there's a lot of other things that they do. And I did find it very fascinating. I listened to a book by a former U.S. Marshal, and yeah, it was just all interesting how they, they almost kind of are outside the box a little bit, you know, do things interesting the way they kind of catch people and trap people. And I found it fun and different. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And just the, that they don't like to talk about it too much. So for fiction writers, I'm like, well, I can't find this information.
So, we'll just make it work. Yeah.
Make it work. And, you know, so that's always kind of fun. So where are your books set? What kind of location do you enjoy setting for your books?
Well, this series is actually set up in the Pacific Northwest, primarily Washington State, where I was born and raised. And so it was kind of fun to go back there. This particular book is more in the Olympic Park and in Seattle and on Ruby Beach, which is along the beautiful Washington State coastline. The other books kind of went up into the island, San Juan Islands, and which is some place I'd been a couple years ago. And I was like, okay, I've really got to set something up here because it's so beautiful, you know, with all the forest and kind of eerie fog. And, you know, it's just a great place where fugitives can get lost. And you can just have a lot of options. And the terrain up there is so beautiful. You've got rainforest and beaches and cities and just... I like to see settings are kind of like a whole nother character. And this was just a fun place to put the book.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously you based it on where you lived, where you went. So how else do you figure about location? What about location do you think is important for authors to kind of think about when writing a book?
It depends on what your book is. I know a lot of readers love small towns. So, you know, small towns are always good. You probably find this too. In a big city, it's harder to write suspense because just go to the police station, you know, and it seems like so easy. Just so to make it more remote, especially for romantic suspense, it's almost a must. I mean, you have to have no communication. You have to have, you know, some place where the answer isn't. And I did read this book one time and I just thought so many times, just go to the police. And then I know the book would be over, but it was like ridiculous. Yeah. And so these kinds of settings to me, when you've got forest and you're in the middle of nowhere and communication really can be glitchy, you know, it's that to me, especially for a romantic suspense, that's kind of what we need to tend to do. And I think what most romantic suspense authors do, you know, Alaska, I mean, that's, you know, you can be in the middle of nowhere and you can be running and there's really no one to help you. So those kinds of settings are really essential. In the middle of a big city, I find it a lot more difficult. You got to have a really good reason. And obviously there's probably reasons why people wouldn't just go to the police, but you got to have good motivation for that.
Right. One of my books is coming out in this summer is set in rural Shenandoah Valley, rural Virginia. And I actually have an old fashioned phone booth because it's in one of those kind of dead zones. When you get out in the rural, there's not, you think, because most of us live in bigger cities, not most of us, but I know a lot of us, you know, I live right outside of Washington, D.C. It's hard for me to fathom sometimes that there are pockets of fairly populated areas that you can lose cell phone coverage pretty easily.
Exactly.
So I had some orchard owners install a phone booth because their workers needed a working phone if there was an emergency because cell phone service wasn't.
Right.
Thing. So those, and then, so you kind of, you know, I kind of explained that a little bit in there. So people weren't like, well, that's really stupid. If you grew up in a big city, you're thinking, nobody has a phone,
but it doesn't happen anymore, but it does. Yeah. Yeah.
But it does. And I've actually been in rural Virginia and passed by and seen like phone booths with like a phone. And I'm like, that's still a thing sometimes. Yeah.
And it just works for romantic suspense. Yeah.
Yes. Sure. Yes, it does. Oh, the phone book did get all shot up. So, you know, had to have some excitement in there. But so Jessica, how did you come up with this series?
Well, I love Criminal Minds. I like shows that really kind of go into the psyche of a serial killer, what makes them a serial killer, and then how are we going to catch them? And I knew I wanted to do a series based on that. So that's what began it all. And then I just kind of just started brainstorming, okay, who is she? And then how do I want to kill people? And who do I want to kill in Texas? So I did a lot of research of Texas and the settings, And sometimes that kind of helps me decide, okay, we're looking at this part of Texas. So what could happen here? Well, we're close to the border. So mm-hmm. I thought, well, what could we do? What's this killer doing? Who is he killing? And then it just kind of snowballed from there.
Yeah. And so do you have the other, you said it was a 3-book series?
It is.
So do you have the other 2 books? You decide what's happening in those books?
Yeah, the second book is about the second profiler in this particular series. So you'll get a peek at both profilers, Duke Jericho and Vera Gilmore. And the second book is Duke's story. So you'll meet them very briefly in the first book. And so then I had to decide, okay, who is he? And how do I want to write his story? And what hooks do I want to use? Because mm-hmm. Loveinspire likes lots of tropes.
Yes.
And so yes. I kind of write out what hooks appeal to me. And then I kind of develop the story around that. So we have an age gap romance. He's about 12 to 14 years older than my heroine. And she is a forensic artist in the second story. And he's coming to figure out, profile a Sunrise serial killer. And redo that profile that's about a decade old, and he's going to meet up with her in this particular story. And then the third story is Vera Gilmore, and it's a reunion romance story. Mm. I love reunion romances. Yeah. They're kind of my favorite of all the romances. I like reunions.
And that's, and for our, can you define that for our listeners who may not be familiar with that term?
Reunion romance.
I mean, it kind of makes sense.
Romance is where two people once dated, maybe were engaged, childhood sweethearts, and something has caused them to break up. It could be a myriad of things. It could be an ugly breakup. In this particular story, it's just they took different paths. They're very fond memories of one another. I've done the You Broke My Heart before. And so, you know, I thought I would like to do something fresh, because not every breakup is a You Broke My Heart. It's just circumstances change. I have really fond memories, but I haven't seen them in, you know, 15 or 20 years. And yeah. He has an arsonist and needs some help. He's a detective in a small fictional West Texas town. And she's going to come and help him. But it's a pretty big deal for her, because she's been burned literally by fire. So she's coming to kind of face her biggest fears. And so we'll get them back together, which is not a spoiler alert, because you always get them together at the end in a romance. It's how they're going
right.
to get together.
Yes. Yeah. Right. I know it's not, I mean, that's one of the things I enjoy writing at romantic suspense, is that yes, they are going to be together. There's no, yeah, you may think they're not, but it's just the journey of how they get together, how they're going to, you know, overcome their antipathy for each other, if they don't like each other, or, you know, what's going to happen. How are they going to, you know, reconnect after, you know, for your reunion idea. And I just love that they do get together. I mean, we need happy endings. Yes. Happy endings are good. Life, there's a lot of happy endings in life.
We need the happy and we need the hope. We need that there's hope for something better. And
yes.
That's what I love about these stories. There's always hope for them and a happily ever after. So.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Even with the, you know, danger and it's suspense that we have to write, right? You know, it's, I love that we can, you know, and as Christian writers, you know, we infuse some of that with our faith, right? I mean, that's what gives us the ultimate hope, and having the characters grow in their faith or come to grips with faith or refresh their faith in a way is, I think, is always exciting, because that's how life is. You know, our faith is not this linear, gee, here we are, you know, it's the ups and the downs. We have the good days when we're like, everything's fine, and the bad days where we're like, where is God? You know, so I love that we can, you know, write that in our characters and have them have that authenticity for faith as well.
Right. That's good.
Yeah. Yeah. Good stuff. So, so what was your most surprising thing that you learned about Texas in your research?
Oh, that is a good question. I don't know if anything was surprising, but I know it was very exciting and enthralling. I enjoyed researching the Davis Mountains, the Rio Grande. I stretched a lot for fiction because that's what we do, but also there are some real things there. And I think probably my favorite part was researching their canoe trip and using real life, like actual trip, and using some of that verbiage was fun. I think it's going to bring some realism. And then of course I did have to stretch stuff. The town is actually fictional, but I based it off of a mixture of a few places actually. Like, oh, I like that. And I like that from that town. So we're just going to have one big town with all this fun stuff in it. So I hope readers from Texas will enjoy seeing some real things and then also show me a little bit of grace with, I don't think that's in the same location. I stretched it.
We have to, because we have to have certain things happen for our story. Right. I mean, you know, if we need a house on this side of the street where there's no houses, we need to put the house there. If we're writing about a real place, or if we're writing about, you know, I like to use real places. And I also like to create, I have created a fictional town, in the Shenandoah Valley, you know, just kind of, there's nothing there. I just put a town there. Yeah, I know. So that's been fun, but I try to make it realistic around it. And then I have some books set in the Northern Virginia area, which is where I live. That's been fun too. But some of them are like, yeah, okay, that I need that not to be quite like that. So, you know, right. I think readers understand it as long as we're not, you know, as long as you're not having, you know, a horrendous blizzard along the Rio Grande.
There is no blizzard in the Rio Grande.
Right. I mean, we all know Texas can get cold, and they had that cold snap last year and everything, but I'm saying that there's some things that you have to go, okay.
Right.
You know, that's just, some readers may not notice, you know, like I've, you know, I probably wouldn't notice, but other readers who are from there, you just don't want to alienate them by being unrealistic. We can stretch it, like you said, we can stretch it. So they'll go, okay, she changed that. But it within the realm of the story, it's still real.
Yes, yes. I made sure to look up the weather and keep that. I mean, the third book is set in winter, but I mean, winter in Texas, there's no snow. I mean, that would be rare, but there's not going to be really any snow there or anything. So that was fun to look up little details like that, looking at the plant life, what's on the terrain. When I talk about a tree, I'd have to look up, well, is that actually a tree there? And what kind of birds are around the Rio Grande? And doing as much as possible to make it as real as possible while still keeping some fictional elements there.
Yeah. And I had one of my Christmas novella is set in my little fictional town, which is basically in central Virginia. And we tend to have very mild winters, and especially December. I mean, there's been Decembers where, you know, it's been 70 degrees in Virginia. And so I had this one plant there that was still green. And I had one of my beta readers years ago commented on it. And I was like, okay, I should probably mention that this is not unusual. So I kind of worked it a little bit into the story by an outsider. He was like, how could those still be, you know, around, you know, cause I'm like, anyone who lives in Virginia or South Carolina, North Carolina, they're going to go, yeah, that's perfectly normal in December to still have a green plant. Right. But someone in Maine or Minnesota is going to go, ain't that thing dead because of the cold? So it's important, like you said, it's important to do that research and or to make sure that if you're stretching it a little bit or if it seems unusual, to offer a quick little you know, explanation, because make it that plant was important to the story, so I needed to make people to believe me that it was alive. Yeah, I think location is always an interesting thing. So do you make up like cities or towns? Have you done that in your writing before? Like a fiction
lot of times town? I do. Yeah. Just because you can't really get into trouble if you make up a town, because nobody can come to me and say that was wrong. So I've done both. Like a lot of this was set in Seattle, and you know, it's wonderful because of the, you know, Google Maps and all of this, whether they were in Seattle or whether they were in a, you know, along the coastline where there really probably wasn't always good communication. you know, I can use that. You can actually just go, you know, Google right in and see exactly mm-hmm. where you want to be. But then I've also done a lot of just made up towns and stuff in areas that people would be familiar with. But I kind of like doing something where I make it up just because, again, nobody can really catch me and people will catch you. If you do something that, you know, that's not right. I live there. I know. And if it's a place where you haven't actually visited, you can get yourself into trouble. So.
Yes. Yeah. No, I totally understand about that. And I've set a couple of books and I live in Northern Virginia in the area. And I had a friend who read one of them. She was, oh, it was fun to see some familiar things. I'm like, yeah, I hope you didn't read it too close. Cause I know I fudged a little bit cause I needed to for specific, but Google Maps, isn't that like the most wonderful gift to writers ever?
It really is. You don't have to go anywhere. I mean, it's better probably if you have been there, but I remember writing a series set like back in Boston or something. And somebody was like, oh, wow, we can just tell that you've been there. And I was like, nope. But you can literally find out about anything. And I'm sure that some of the things I Google probably has the authorities going, what is she doing? But
yeah,
it's all just for the writing, I promise.
That's funny. Facebook recently decided that I was in the market for a wedding dress and a full, like, abaya. Both of them. I was like, I'm not sure what I was looking for to get those two.
Yeah, but somehow they thought you were up. Yeah.
Not Muslim, but okay. And then I feel pretty good that they have no idea what I really want. And So writers, we have a lot of fun messing up all those algorithms because I'm searching for car models. I'm like, I am never going to buy this car. So come on, give me all the ads because I am not your customer.
It's so much easier though than having to go to the library or having to order books. I do have a stack of books from, 20 years ago, all about crime and the crime scenes, just all this kinds of stuff. Now it's like, I can just go online and actually get information from a real person who, can answer those questions for me. It's crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy. And it is nice. I mean, there are, we all have a lot of books. You can see some of my books behind me on the video here, but we all love the books, but for the location, cause the Google Maps has just been mm-hmm. and Google Earth, you can kind of go down, drill down and see, okay, how close was this road to the water
exactly.
in this story?
It's fun.
And that's, You've been listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense. I'm your host, Sarah Hammerker, and I'm so glad you joined me. You can find out more about Lisa and Jessica and their new books in the notes for this podcast.
The Catch by Lisa Harris. After a harrowing attempt on a judge's life at the courthouse, Deputy U.S. Marshals Madison James and Jonas Quinn are tasked with finding a missing woman and an endangered child in connection to the murder of the judge's wife. What seems like a fairly straightforward case becomes hopelessly tangled when the marshals discover that the woman they're searching for is not who they think she is. Madison and Jonas are forced into a race to find the woman and the child before the men who want her dead discover her location. And in a final showdown that could cost her everything, Madison will come face to face with the person who murdered her husband.
Thanks for listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hammerker. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. You can sign up to receive notifications of upcoming podcasts and listen to previous editions at sarahhammerkerfiction.com.